the Shore Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom once again, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud, and once again, we're bringing to you our latest Torah tidbit. This time, it's taken from the portion called Vayetze, or, and he went out, referring to Jacob's flight from Beersheba to Haran after Esau had determined to kill him. And so our Torah portion begins in Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. Now Jacob went out, and that word is Vayetze. Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And so he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and he put it at his head and he lay down in that place to sleep. And so while this portion begins with a very awesome and I would add needful encounter with the Almighty, I mean, you have to consider that this place that he lighted upon was actually Mount Moriah, a place that he will call Beth-El, the house of God. And this is the place where God made covenant with Jacob. That's why I say a needful encounter. Nonetheless, Jacob's flight from one dangerous and crafty person, that is Esau, is going to place him in the home of another crafty and deceitful person, and that is Laban. Now, rabbinically speaking, Laban is viewed as one who tried his very best to uproot the nation of Israel. He does this by being so deceitful and cruel to Jacob. Nevertheless, even though Jacob was forced to leave the land of promise, which, by the way, symbolizes the exile, Jacob was also promised protection by God at Mount Moriah. And he was promised by God that at the appropriate time, he would be brought back into the land of promise. Now, once arriving in Paddan Aram, we see once again that a well figures prominently in the story, and it becomes the place where the bride of a patriarch is going to be found. Of course, you should recall that in a previous Torah portion, Abraham's servant, Eliezer, met Rebekah at a well on Isaac's behalf. Moses will later meet Zipporah at a well. And of course, Yeshua in John chapter 4 met the Samaritan woman at a well. And so it is that at a well, perhaps the same well that Eliezer first encountered Rebekah, that Jacob meets Rachel. The Bible tells us this. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near, and he rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel, and he wept aloud. Now, the kiss here is probably not a romantic kiss. It's most likely a respectful kiss of salutation between family members. And yet, we see that Jacob is soon to fall in love with her. And that is something that is going to factor prominently in what was to befall Jacob while he was sojourning in Syria. Now, when Laban heard that a relative was in town, he ran out to meet him. He embraced him. He kissed him, which is remarkably different from the kind of treatment that he would later bestow upon Jacob. Now, not too long after Jacob contracted to work 7 years for Laban, in exchange that Laban would grant him to marry Rachel, we're told that Jacob served those 7 years as if they were nothing. It was as if they were just a few days, and it was because he loved the woman so much. Now, of course, as you already know, because everybody knows the story, at the end of the 7 years, Jacob goes to Laban to receive Rachel as his wife, and then Laban makes a wedding feast, feigning his intent to keep his word to Jacob. But as we all know, instead, he took Leah, rabbinic commentary says, heavily veiled and under the cover of darkness, he took Leah to Jacob's tent. And then we read that, and it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. Jacob had been deceived. But it wouldn't be for the last time, because for approximately 20 years, Jacob worked for his uncle, was used by his uncle, and was repeatedly cheated by his uncle. Yet, in spite of being labeled supplanter, you will recall that Esau made that accusation. He has supplanted me these two times, Esau said. In spite of that, we never read that Jacob took it upon himself to take what he thought might rightfully belong to him. Everything that Jacob amassed while he was there in Laban's house, he did so with Laban's knowledge and with his approval. Well, approval might not be the best word, because as Jacob and Laban prospered, Laban's other children began to take issue with Jacob, and it was a reflection of their father's attitude. And so it's recorded for us in Genesis chapter 31. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all his wealth." And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." And so over those 20 years, things changed. And we also see that after 20 years of faithful service, Jacob is then accused of stealing from Laban. The blessing God had bestowed upon him and them while Jacob worked there, all it did was provoke them to jealousy and to have contempt for Jacob. Now, this isn't the only time that we see in Scripture that God's people are slandered and falsely accused because of God's blessing. Cain was jealous of Abel. Pharaoh and Abimelech, they also accused God's people without basis, as well as many others that we could list. So, the reason that Jacob was in Syria was because Esau violently accused Jacob of stealing from him twice, and now he's being accused once more. So it would seem then that those who are jealous of God's favor upon his people resort to this type of tactic. And so the rabbis say that Jacob, or Israel, must suffer many accusations at the hand of the wicked. The wicked Laban was no exception to this. And before long, he could not hide his bad feelings toward Jacob. And it was at that point that God released Jacob to take him, his family, and all of his belongings, and to go home. And so, just as this portion began with a flight from someone who wanted to harm him, so it ends. Jacob flees from Laban, who then pursues him with a great number of people and finally overtakes him in the mountains of Gilead. Now, when they meet there, Laban pretends to be hurt at Jacob's actions. Like, "Why are you doing this? What did I ever do to you?" He's acting like the injured father. But yet he again accuses Jacob of wrongdoing, stealing Laban's gods. He even hints to Jacob that he would have killed him if it weren't for his God. Perhaps Laban was using these gods as an excuse to search through all of Jacob's stuff. Perhaps he was convinced that Jacob really had them. But whatever the case, and whatever prompted him to do this, Laban's attitude finally evoked a response from Jacob, because it says this, that he challenged Laban to place any stolen goods in the open so that everyone could see. And he reminded him that in the 20 years of service, he had never taken one thing from him. To the contrary, if an animal was killed by a wild beast, he didn't let Laban suffer the losses. Jacob bore the loss. If something was stolen by someone, Jacob made good on it even though he wasn't guilty of the theft. In short, Jacob went above and beyond to make sure that there could be no accusation railed against him. Laban's accusations were unjustified, and Jacob knew it, and Laban knew it. And so finally, Jacob said this in Genesis chapter 31, verse 41. "I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed." So finally, he responds to all of this, but not unjustly. And he doesn't say anything that's not true. It's all true. So the point in all of this is the so-called supplanter was continually being supplanted by others. Those who accused him of transgression were guilty of what they accused him of. More to the point, God had brought Jacob to be to a place and into a season where he was constantly wronged. Even after God had promised he would be with him, he was continually wronged and accused, and yet he never repaid evil with evil. He was cheated, but he never cheated. Perhaps seeing this 20-year period of trial, suffering, and simultaneous prosperity was God's way of seeing whether or not Jacob was worthy of the calling that he had pronounced upon him at Mount Moriah, or that place that he called Bethel. In other words, by putting him through this, would Jacob be a supplanter or would he be a prince of God? Now, there's a comment I read once in a Jewish reference that said that God's tests are always calibrated to correspond to the strength of the person being tested. In other words, God put Jacob in this situation because he knew that it was within Jacob's makeup to resist the temptation, to resist the need to cheat or to return Laban's deceit with deceit of his own. That would not be a characteristic compatible with what he had been called to do. And so then, for those of us who have been called of God to walk in the footsteps of the Messiah, those of us who are regarded as His people, I want you to put yourself in Jacob's place. You've been accused, you've been cheated. What would you have done? Would you have convinced yourself that because you had been cheated by someone, cheating them was justified? Because they had falsely accused you of something that was wrong, that somehow in some way you were within your rights to accuse them of something that you felt would cause them harm? Perhaps God places us in these kinds of situations where people are accusing, where people are making threats, where people are misusing us, not to reveal the wickedness within the heart of those people or the Lavans of the world, as much as it is to reveal what's truly in our heart. So again, if you were in that same situation that Jacob found himself, God having promised that He would be with you and that He would protect you and that He would bring you back at the appropriate time into the home of your fathers, and yet you found yourself being cheated and accused and misused, and in the midst of all this, God is still prospering you, though, what would you have done? What would you do? Again, maybe these kinds of situations are not so much to reveal the wickedness of others as much as it is to reveal what's inside our heart. And so with that thought, I'll leave you and hope that you'll join us for our next Torah tidbit. Until then, Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.